Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. This week, we did something different. We did this episode via Spotify Green Rooms, which is an app on your phone that you download, and then multiple people can come in and be nominated as speakers and things. So bear with it. There's a few technical problems, but only minor, but I think you'll enjoy the conversation. We had people from we had Woody from Throwback Hoops. We had Hilton, Daniel, Andrew, Adam, Jackson McDonald, Evan from NBL News Podcast, so a bunch of different places, and we talked all about everything that was the NBL in the last week and the week to come. I hope you enjoy it. And of course, if you really enjoy the show, do consider becoming a patron via the link in the description. Thanks very much.
Three ball from CG43. They're in front.
This is flat out ridiculous. From a beautiful left hand, in and out finish. The old fashioned way.
Newell gets to the basket with one to come. From there again. You have got to be kidding me. Tyson Stiff.
This is very experimental. So I'll put this audio up onto Apple Podcasts and it'll come out as a normal app. Anyway, let's just jump straight in. So round 18, the round that was. Let's start right at the top. Illawarra, Brisbane. Be honest, Andrew, how many games did you watch this round of consequence?
I was limited. I think I saw maybe three games, I have to admit. I think it was three, maybe four, three and a half, something like that. It was tough. Some of those games, I was just like, they're not consequential. I've got a life to lead and I can't watch every game at this point.
Well, this one, Illawarra, Brisbane. Illawarra won this one easily, 87-70. The big stat for me, or the big moment, was Franks Kadee Patterson. 25 points combined, 10 of 39, 26% from the field. That's 2.6%. They just didn't show. Illawarra looked good, though. Illawarra starting to play defense, 70 points. Normally they allow teams in the 80-90. This was a low-scoring game, albeit against Brisbane. Bit better.
Yeah, I feel like a bit of a goose. I've been saying, oh, has Gorgian lost the group? Has he lost his touch as a coach? And now they look fine. He looks fine, apart from having a gammy leg. You know, like, it's all Gorgian basketball once again. Yeah. He's going to make the finals again.
Well, are they on a 3 or 4 game win streak? Because they've beaten Melbourne twice. We didn't see them doing that. And then Brisbane sandwiched in between. So unbelievable. So let's jump on to this next one and we'll bring in Daniel because we'll talk about Adelaide versus Tasmania and then also Brisbane Adelaide, which happened later in the round. Let's see if we can bring in Daniel. This will be fun. Daniel, I hope you're ready.
All right.
I hope you're ready. You're getting a call up. Hilton. Hi, Hilton. Hey, Woody. Woody's coming in when we talk Kings. That's good. And a little bit of Pinder as well. Invite to speak. Would like to speak. Here we go. Daniel's coming in.
All right.
Daniel, when you can speak, you speak up, you let us know.
Yeah, hello.
Yes, the author.
Daniel, how are you doing?
I'm well, thank you.
Good. Let's jump in. Let's talk about these two games. We're going to jump from the second game of the round to the third last game of the round. Adelaide, Tasmania, Adelaide losing it at home, 72-80. Scoreline, if I remember, is pretty flattering because Adelaide were down quite a fair bit and came back in the last little bit. Did you watch it, Daniel? And if so, what did you think?
Yeah, I saw the second half and I thought the Sixers looked pretty similar to where they've looked for the last month, which is a little bit hopeless and lacking offensively. They still just don't have a reliable bucket apart from Daniel Johnson, who just seems disinterested, to be honest.
You know, I agree with all that.
He does seem to have tuned out, doesn't he? It's like, I think even Daniel Johnson's his laconic nature, but even he seems burnt out by it all.
It was weird, this one, for me. I mean, 36ers, fourth quarter, 10-22 to the Jack Jumpers, who, you know, the game was going well and then Adelaide just completely died in the fourth. And I really have no explanation for it other than, I don't know, a bit of CJ just being, I don't know, they just look really bad. Dim-witted is the word I've got written here. And also effort lacking. Tasmania beat them in the way that Tasmania beats every team, which is just don't turn it over, out-rebound them, you know, and Adelaide have out-rebounded well all year. And then I've got the rebound count here, Adelaide 34, Tasmania 47. So Tasmania did what was totally predictable for them, and it seemed to just totally flummox and surprise the 36ers. I didn't get it. Andrew, did you? Is this one you watched?
I saw bits of it. The thing that I'm wondering about, and maybe Daniel, you can provide some insight here, is CJ now just running players to see who's going to be back next year? Is that the way that, you know, like, results don't matter? It's just about what can you show me for the next season? What do you reckon?
I'm not sure CJ would say results don't matter, but I definitely think he's giving a few more people a look. Like Mojave King's minutes have gone up over the last few games. Hynam Harris is getting a really good look. But, you know, someone like Emmanuel Malou, who started a couple of games early in the season, can't get a look in. Their biggest issue is that they've got no bigs. They've got DJ and they've got Kai Soto with Humphries and Bairstow injured, and that's why Tassie smashed them on the board.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You're forgetting Withers. I mean,
he's not a weapon. Withers is a wing. He's not a big. I didn't forget him. It just doesn't count.
Sadly, I just don't think Withers is a lot of anything, unfortunately. He just doesn't seem to play. And did both of them come off the bench in this one? Is this where CJ put his foot down and said, no, we're just going to go with Harris and
Dusty didn't play.
Dusty didn't play. I know he sat one of these. I forgot which one. Yeah. I'll say this, Daniel. If you're running the 36ers, are you bringing either of them back, even as a third import slot, you know, like as the lesser third?
No. But if I was going to bring one of them back as a third import, it would be Withers.
Really? Over Dusty? Really? That's interesting. Wow. I'd go the other way. Why would you go with Withers?
Because he's more versatile. Withers is a one-trick pony. So Withers, you know, he can shoot a little bit. He can rebound. He can defend if that's all you ask of him in multiple positions. Dusty can't defend. His shot for the guy is supposed to be the best three-point shooter outside the NBA. He didn't shoot very well. And, yeah, I'm just not sure about him at all. Whereas I think Withers in that role, say, off the bench as a backup wing, he'd be a more reliable version of someone like Ruben Tarangi.
Okay. No, I can't debate that. I think he'd be an upgrade on Ruben Tarangi.
You being damned with faint praise there. You could be the next Ruben Tarangi.
Let's jump onto that other Adelaide game of the round. Brisbane 92, Adelaide 91. This was the worst of the two losses. At least Tasmania are a somewhat final contender, whereas the Bullets not so much. It looked bad for Brisbane a while, and then they just came back. I really haven't got... Oh, this was... I've got another bad final play from Adelaide. What happened at the end of this game? Because my memory escapes me. Do you remember, Daniel?
I remember they didn't get a decent shot off, and that Sunday Detch hit a shot just after the buzzer that would have won.
That's right. Oh yeah, Daniel Johnson is. There was the only contention was whether Johnson was pushed in the back on the actual play. Harris had the shot. That's what happened. They were down one, and yeah, ran a play, and it ended up just being a McCarron threw it over to Hyrum Harris, who caught it at about the, you know, free throw line, a little bit higher, and had to just drive in and throw up a shot that was going nowhere. And there was some contention that maybe Johnson was pushed in the back. I didn't see it that way. Yeah, again, Adelaide, this is not the first time that they've run a really, really bad play to you know, try and take a game. This one was pretty hopeless as well. Andrew, did you watch this one?
This is one I skipped, I've got to admit. Yeah, I'm sorry. But two non-playoff teams and... Yeah, just spent time with the kids instead. Is that I've failed as an NBL correspondent this
that happens. Tell me, Andrew, I'll ask you this, Andrew, and then Daniel, I'll get your response as well. Who's in the worst position as a franchise going forward and year on year and players and just position within the league? Brisbane or Adelaide? I think that, and if so, what position are they in? And are they the two teams that are in the worst position? Like, obviously, they're above Cairns and New Zealand on the ladder, but I actually kind of like the way they've at least got some sort of pieces, like a bit of Wetzel, and they've had circumstances way worse than either of these two teams, but these two teams seem to be the real underperformers. So, Andrew, who's in the worst position out of the two clubs, and how would you categorise that position?
Ooh, it's a good question. I think, and I'm sorry, Daniel, I think I've got to put Adelaide 36ers in the worst position there. I think... Structurally, they've got an owner who doesn't want to spend money. And I think for as long as you've got that situation, you're unlikely to improve. You know, you might get lucky, but I don't know, I just feel like Brisbane seem to have a better infrastructure in place. to at least attempt to build something. Adelaide, it just seems so piecemeal with Adelaide. Every year it's like different. They don't keep their locals. There's no, it doesn't seem like there's an appetite for anybody to play for Adelaide. I think Adelaide's in a worse position.
Daniel, what do you think?
I think Adelaide's in a worse position because there's unknown. They don't have a general manager after JVG finally left the building, and he didn't leave them in a great position. But until you know who's going to be filling that role, I think it's hard to say. CJ came in after a roster was finalised. Brisbane, though, have been barely a professional franchise for, 4 years now? So I'm not sure they're in much better position. Grant Kelly at least wants to be seen to spend money. Brisbane have been, what's been the deal with their imports the last 3 years? And they continue to experiment with an NBL club who haven't had a point guard for 3 years. So they're more stable. I don't know if they're necessarily in a better position.
Funnily enough, contrary to both of you, I think it's Brisbane. And I think it's because Sobey's out of contract. Whereas at least Adelaide have got some stability in that McCarron's locked down. We would all agree a decent local. I think they've still got Humphreys for what that's worth. I think he's got another year left. There's a bit there. Whereas
I'm not sure on that.
You're not sure on that? Oh, he did his own two or three.
His original 2 year deal.
This was it. Wow. Okay, I take that back. McCarron then. McCarron's got this year and two more. And then DJ, I think, has got 1 year. I think he signed a 3 year. 2 years ago. So they've got them at least. There's some structure, some place. Whereas Brisbane,
I think Sunday might have one more year as well.
So that's three players. We're like, okay, we've got the struts. Whereas Brisbane, Sobey's out of a deal, and their bench. There's I don't see anything on that bench other than Deng Deng of value. I think Deng Deng will probably get Pilford as well. I think a team like Perth would look at him. I think a team like Southeast Melbourne, even Melbourne itself, he is a really good bench player. I really like him. So they're all out of contract. The idea that Creek's going to go there, I've got written here, no national coach cachet before they got Sobey because they had Lemanis. And yes, it was a small market. Maybe the money was okay, but you had Lemanis, and really it's what got Sobey on that. Certainly, did he go to the World Cup? Yeah, he did. Went to the World Cup and to the Olympic Games, arguably, maybe that was a Gorgian, but got him in the national team conversation. So they don't have that now where they can go to a Creek and say, hey, do you want to come? We're the national coach. So I think that's a huge catch. They only had 2,500. Here's the other thing as well. Adelaide, for all their faults, I think at that Tasmania game had about 4,000. And that's about their number. I think this one was down to about 3,500. But typically this season, even though they've had a cruddy season, their attendance has been up in the 4,500. Whereas Brisbane, there were 2,500 at this game, their home game against Adelaide. So I thought that was really, really bad showing. Their long-standing import in Patterson is not coming back. As much as Withers and Hannes, I actually kind of think Hannes, you're like, gee, if you hung on to him, at least he's young. He looked energetic. He can't defend, but at every second game, he will shoot you 30 points. He is capable of every second game. So there's something there. Whereas Isaiah Moss, bad. Patterson checked out. Franks is quite good. I guess that's the one thing where you could say, oh, we've got some value from him, but are they going to re-sign him? And then also, I think local players are going to sour on the Bullets because of the whole Magne handling. Was with the team, long-standing kid, DP'd a player, and then they boned him hard over that NBA buyout. So I think a lot of locals will be like, you know what, we know the way you do business, Brisbane Bullets, not interested. So that's why I say Brisbane, but I think there's a case for both.
Both teams are
strong with locals. Joe, the flip side of that was the Mitch Creek situation for Adelaide, though. They didn't do much better.
And Jack McVay as well.
Jack McVay. Do either of you think they're in a better position than either Cairns or New Zealand? I'll ask you that. Andrew, let's start with you. Do you think they're in a better position than either of those two?
No. I think Cairns, they've been terrible, but there just seems to be some light at the end of the tunnel for them. And I think they can build a method of playing that suits that market. Sort of the grab your lunch pail and let's go to work kind of approach. And New Zealand, once they get back to actually playing New Zealand, they'll be a lease on life. They'll retool. They might detool and upgrade their coaching roster and take it from there as well. I think
I will say quickly about Cairns. Their sort of upkick has coincided with the return and the healthiness of Machado. I don't think that's any surprise. He looked really good in the win that they eked out against Southeast Melbourne, which I can't wait to talk about. Daniel, do you feel the same way? That do you feel like at least Cairns, New Zealand, there's just a rumbling of something there, or do you feel the opposite?
I feel like they're in a better spot than Cairns still, because Cairns' local talent is still lesser than Adelaide's and has been for a while. That's their Achilles heel. Yeah. I think New Zealand is talent-wise in a better position than both of them. It's everything else that's worked against them.
Yeah. I feel like stuff that's been out of their control, injury and COVID, have worked as bad as they possibly could, and it's just happened. Whereas Brisbane and Adelaide have had a pretty good run in those two respects and just haven't been good teams. Brisbane, most mystifying. I didn't think they were going to be great, but I thought they were going to be a contender in the same way that I thought they were going to be Tasmania, but they just haven't. They've been coming close to it. Yeah, all right.
What do you think is going to happen with
Sophie? Well, I think he's going to try and recruit Mitch Creek and try and get a little sort of boomery B team up there, and they seem pretty willing to invest in locals up there. I think he's going to try and build his little team, and if he can't, I honestly think he'll look around. I just don't think Brisbane, like the games are, it's a really pokey, small venue. If Southeast Melbourne have an interest in Sobey, you know, I just don't know why he wouldn't do that. I don't think Creek's gone up there. I don't think that has any appeal.
I don't understand that rumor at all.
I don't get it. Like, he's in Melbourne, good state of life. Southeast Melbourne and him have a very good sort of synergy. I don't get it. What do you think, Daniel?
I think he probably stays in Brisbane. What I'd like to see is the Jack Jumpers to throw a truckload of money at him.
Really?
Because I think he's perfect down there.
The other one's Illawarra. Does he go there? Did he go follow another national coach? You know, I don't know.
I don't reckon Jack Jumpers would want Mitch Creek.
No, I meant Sobey.
Oh, Sobey. Sorry.
Yeah, I think Illawarra. Well, the talk is that Gorgon's going to leave Illawarra for Southeast Melbourne. That's a rumour that's actually got a decent amount of legs. I've heard that from a couple of people. That would be interesting.
That would surprise me.
It would surprise me greatly. He's on the beach and he's like, you know what? I'm not jumping teams. I'm in my 70s now. I'm on the beach. I'm only too happy. Yeah, but all I can say is there is a lot of people saying that rumour. Mm. Interesting. Daniel, thanks for jumping in. We're going to move on to other games, but you know, this was great. It was kind of fun. All right, I'll see if I can remove a speaker. Great, thanks, Dan.
While Joe's sorting that out, I'll give a score up that there's 3 minutes left in this WNBL game. Melbourne Boomers 69, Perth 66.
Okay, if that gets real close, we'll come back. We spoke about it before. Let's welcome some new people. We got Woody, we got Matt Reed. Hello, Matt. Hilton Barber, good to see everyone. Let's talk about this game, Melbourne Illawarra, 1996. We thought that Illawarra was going to win one of these games against Melbourne. We thought they were going to split them. They didn't. They won them both. Which ones? This one surprised me in Melbourne. This 1996. Yeah, you go, Andrew.
This is the Cleveland, you know, mini trap game. I think.
Yeah.
Just doing a bit of everything and just athleticism for Byrne. And Melbourne didn't really have an answer for him.
No, he was the difference, wasn't he? I thought the play where Rathan Mays got through, pump fake, stepped through, kind of got another guy diving at him, dumped it off, and he was just up. He was dunking. Speaking of White Man Can't Jump last week, you know, when Woody, like, White Man Can't Jump, and then the last game he does get up for that two hander and he's holding on the rim and he's got the rim down at his like navel, his belly button. That's how Cleveland finished on the dunk. It was absolutely spectacular. What have I got here in my notes?
Yeah.
I've got.
And then Rathan Mays just brought the game home. He just went on a mid-range blitzkrieg.
Blitzkrieg, little lightning war. And I mean, he was incredible. And the thing was, without Harvey, and that was sort of the one sort of sour note was, oh shit, they actually look better without him. Do you think? So my first question for you, Andrew, is, do you think they look better without him? And if so, why? And if they're going to integrate him back, is this a question we should be having of, oh, Harvey, stay away? Or does he actually complement what they did in this game to win?
What I'm hoping is that this becomes sort of the formula for them to win and he slots back into this mode of play. So it's less the Tyler Harvey, you know, you know, center man. It's more about working the team around, finding good strengths and getting everybody involved. And if he can just facilitate a little bit more, I think it'll be fine. If he comes to me and goes, I want it to be like last year all over again, yeah, it might all fall apart. But I'm hoping now that they've seen they can have success in this method and that he'll buy into that. He's a good player, you know, like he showed.
Yeah.
And I think he wants, I'm sure that he wants to have team success.
Mm. Yeah, I agree with that. One thing in my notes here, and this is a kind of a running theme, like the favourable whistle that Melbourne get in games. And I don't think I'm being conspiracy theorist or anti-Melbourne by saying this. They get a very fond whistle for a couple of reasons. They've got Dellavedova, who's a national treasure. They've got a couple of things working in their favour. But I've got written here, fourth quarter, at the 4:26 mark, Gorgian had to use a challenge just to get the benefit of the doubt. So if I remember correctly, Delly drove the ball got stripped, they call a foul. And then Brian Gorgian had to go, listen, it's not a foul and I'm going to challenge it. He won the challenge. And that's the difference between Melbourne and every other team, I honestly feel, is Dellavedova drives. If that was Taylor Harvey, let's say, drives, gets stripped, you know, they wouldn't get a foul call there. Whereas Dellavedova gets a foul call and Gorgian's got to actively search out to get the fair call. And I don't know what it is where Melbourne just seemed to get a favourable whistle. I think it's purely because they just set a really physical tone and the refs and the game kind of flows behind them. But that was one.
Yeah, it sort of reminds me as well back in when Damian Martin was playing for the Wildcats. And
Exactly.
He was a great defender, but he got away with a few fouls because he had this reputation of being a great defender. So they would give him the benefit of the doubt. And I think Dilly, and that whole cadre of guards gets that same benefit. They can scrag a little bit and get away with a few hacks because they're seen to be good defenders.
Mm. And I didn't think that the foul was... I didn't think this sort of strip or foul was that obvious, but Gorgian was just like... It's definitely going to be overturned. We're definitely challenging. And the moment he won it, it wasn't like, oh, I've won the challenge. It was smug. It was just like, yeah, you know, call it both ways. Like, call this thing fair. So he was very, very, it was almost, he had a bit of despair in his voice of like, come on, get real. So that was funny. And people, when you go back and have a watch it, definitely should. I'll say this as well. Tip of the cap to Gorgian, kind of out-coached Vickerman a little bit in this one. There was a time when they were doing a bit of D on Rath and Mays and it was getting a bit hairy and, as a sort of bold move, Gorgian brought in Harry Froling. And as a result of that, they had to guard the screener a bit more. It just changed things up and Rathamay's got his freedom back. It was really quite interesting to see where it was like, uh-oh, what's his name? Xavier Rathamay's ex-RM was getting kind of shut off. And then when Froling came in late, they had to guard the screener and he got this space again. And I thought, oh, he's sort of chess moved Vickerman a little bit on that. But unless you've got anything else, Andrew, that's all I have from this one.
Yeah. No, that'll do it for a while, really, making some noise again.
I think what we'll do is we're going to talk about Cairns and South East Melbourne and Tasmania and Sydney. I see we've got Woody in. I think we're going to bring Woody in to talk about Cairns and Pinder and Sydney. Let's bring him in. Let's see if he's available.
Yeah, and as Woody's coming in, I'll just say Caleb George just did a big three for the Boomers to put them up by 4 points with 43 seconds left in the game.
All right. I've said something to Woody. I know Woody's watching the Hey now. Woody, you there?
I'm here. AC, man, I got the game on pause, brother. You know, you're giving me too many spoilers for me. You know,
Sorry, man. Nah. I didn't realize people were pausing the game. Jeez. I'm trying to do my live reporter, you know, around the grounds kind of reporting there.
Nah, you're good, man. JC, AC, what's up?
Good to see you. Hey, for people listening, this is Woody of Throwback Hoops. You'll find it on Apple, YouTube, Facebook, the whole thing. Go and check it out. Woody, Cairns, South East Melbourne. Cairns snuck this one out. This was sort of their jack jumper moment, I think is what I caught. Fuck. This was a big win for them. What have I got written here? Did you watch it, Woody? And if so, what do you think?
I did. I watched all of it, man, for sure. Yeah.
And what do you think?
I mean, like, you know, South East Melbourne, they're struggling, man. And Cairns, like, I think having Zimmerman out, you know, as you spoke about Keanu, being able to step up and take added responsibility actually helped them, you know, not having Taj sometimes, you know, stops them a little bit, makes bad decisions. As good a player as he is, it looks like, you know, Cairns were thriving with Machado with the ball in his hands and some of these other guys having to step up, and Taj and Zimmerman actually being out on in both of those games, actually, not just the Southeast Melbourne one, but they went against New Zealand on I think it was Monday night, right? Yeah. So
did you watch this one, Andrew?
Yes, sir.
I'll ask you this, Andrew. I'll start with you. Woody, same question. You go second. Did Cairns win it or did Southeast Melbourne lose it? What do you think, Andrew?
Southeast Melbourne lost. They've lost the plot. Like, Cairns doing the best they can, but they shouldn't win that game. So yeah, Phoenix are just cooked.
Yeah, I thought Cairns were ready, but Southeast Melbourne lost it. Woody, what do you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, like, Cairns put up quite a few points. That's a big problem with them. Sometimes they're in the 60s and 70s. Yeah. But their offense was humming. And, you know, Scotty Machado is looking like he's in much better form, and he's recovered from that injury. So as much as Southeast Melbourne lost it, Phoenix lost it, Cairns were, their offense was humming, man. And ball was getting through hands, and these guys really had nothing to lose, right? And they're going to be playing spoiler for a few other teams down this stretch, because they're playing with a bit of confidence. I think they won four of their last five games. So, no, I think Cairns also played some good basketball. So, yeah.
I'll say this. Late in the piece, Cairns got real timid. Pinder, I think, fouled out. Had he fouled out? Or was he on the court? Can't recall. But late in the game, it was just like, give the ball to Machado and just stand around and watch him wait. My favorite one was Jordan Nartai, not quite ready to win this one of his own back. Had gone 13 of 13 from the foul line and then misses two.
Right.
Misses two. You got it.
The commentator's curse.
That was
the commentator's curse.
I think it was Casey doing all that. That made me laugh. Because when I was like, shit, I was going to get sports bet out. I was like, I'm going to have a bet this guy misses. I can feel it in my waters. It's just the commentator's curse. I'll say this, and Andrew, we joked about this. If passing out of bounds, if passing in from out of bounds in late game situations, sorry, I've screwed that up. If passing out of bounds in late game situations is cool, consider Kyle Adam and Miles Davis. Another situation where, you know, we had the game against, I want to say, Adelaide? No, yeah, Adelaide. Cal Adnam inbounding the ball, throws it out. No, against Sydney. Who was it against? He was passing the ball inbounds and it went off the Arthur's leg. And then this game, catches it at the foul line, the three-point line, wide open, goes straight out of bounds. Bad look for him.
Straight out of bounds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bad. I felt bad for him.
Yeah, definitely.
You see what he's trying to do. I could see what he was thinking, but it just didn't execute it. Well, not good for him 2 weeks in a row.
Going back to what we're talking about with Southeast Melbourne losing it, Andrew, when you say they lost it, why did they lose it? Like, who didn't? I just didn't think anyone played well. I thought Creek had his usual game, but not, you know, 20 plus. He had sort of mid-teens. The question then to be asked, like, was this on the players' loss? Was this on Mitchell? Did you think that? Who was slacking more, Mitchell or the players? It's a hard question to answer, but what do you think?
What do you got, Woody?
Look, I mean, you'd see certain players, you know, Isaiah Liafa's dribbling the ball just over the half-court line, looking for something, can't find anything, jacks up a three, you know? Yeah. Guys aren't moving off the ball, you know, there's no action going on. So the offense looked very stagnant, right? I mean, you know, sometimes you give the ball to Mitch Creek, go get a bucket, and he did that often and kept them in the game, right? But, you know, I think Mitchell has got to take a little bit of heat here. You know, Mike Kelly did such a great job with Cairns, and the next season, you know, he's out of a job, right? And just because Mitchell did well last year and took him close to the finals doesn't mean he's safe after this year, because I think that he has to lay some of the blame. Yeah, some of the blame's got to lay on him. You talk about that inbounds pass that he drew up for Adnan a few weeks ago, right? You know, with a tall defender on him. Like, you know, these kind of, like, decisions he's making and the offense that he's running for that team is it leaves a lot to be desired of late. And so, yeah, I think he needs to take some responsibility here for sure.
Are they done?
You know, I don't know his contract situation, but look, if I was Tommy Greer in that office, I'd be looking to move on from.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I think they've got as much out of the team with him in charge as they can, and I don't see any more upside. As nice a guy as he is,
yeah, I'm with you.
Well, is it? And I'm with you guys on this one. Woody, I think you put it really well. Like, they shot 3 of 20 from the outside in this game. On the season, they shoot 31% from the three-point line. That's the second worst in the NBL.
And it's just been a constant theme all year. Now, I don't think they have a heck of a lot of shooting talent. Well, I kind of do and I don't. I'm starting to think, for a while there, I thought, no, they just don't have, they don't have players. But then I think, nah, Brokoff, his stroke took him to the NBA and the EuroLeague and Europe. He can shoot it. Cam Glidden can shoot it. I think the last couple of games, he looked really quite dangerous. And I think I'm with you on this one, Woody. I just don't see where they really get structured three-point shots. It's a lot of come up, dribble, oh, see what's happening. Oh, we haven't really got much. Throw it into Creek. So many of these last possessions in this game were so desperate, where it was just get it into Mitch Creek in the low post, and then he's just hoping to plow the guy into the keyway and get a turn and look. And it was so predictable in the fourth that it got shut down. There was nothing, you know, no double screen action and a guy catch it and shoot it. There was no fluidity to the offense. So I just think they're not, they haven't played well. And are they done is my question. Does anyone kind of have the schedule in front of them?
They're done, man. They're done. Put a line through them, man. You know, I think you got Tasmania got more chance to maybe battle for that fourth spot than SEM. So, yeah, that's, I mean, I think they're both not going to make it. But, you know, like,
yeah,
if there was one, I would say, you know, Tasmania. Right.
That's a sad outcome for them. I mean, to go from, you know, bad first year finals and then all the heat they had this preseason of like, oh, they're a contender. I heard Gorgian, Joe G is going to revolutionize the NBL. I was like, no, we didn't quite see it. I think we may have had them in the four, but we didn't feel good about it. I don't know. I can't remember preseason stuff, but they're done. But let's talk about a team that's far from done. Sydney Kings. This game, 83-103. This was,
sure.
This was wow. This was big. I mean, looking at the shooting splits here. Field goal percentage for Sydney, 60% from the field, 40% from the three for the game. The first quarter or first half, they shot 75%. It's something ridiculous. Woody, you would have watched this one and enjoyed it. What'd you think?
Definitely. Yeah, I did. I did. No, it was brilliant. And I mean, if you look at the one of the last losses, it might have been the last loss that we had before the 10-game winning streak, correct me if I'm wrong, was against Tasmania, right? So you see how much this team has come since that loss. To the team that they are now, right? You know, these guys love playing with each other. You know, the emergence of someone like McCormick has been terrific for us. You know, when Hunter went down, RJ Hunter went down, I thought maybe we get a big man to come in. But, you know, that front line of Cooks and Martin has been terrific, and Clark has fitted in nicely. And now that McCormick has emerged, you know, you can cover that position a little bit better. And to Hilton's question, you know, what happens when Brucey comes back? I'm not sure when he's going to come back, Hilton. Is it going to be before the end of this year? I wasn't 100% sure if it will be by playoffs or when. But, I mean, you guys seen The Kingdom, the Sydney Kings documentary on KO and yet?
Any of you? I have.
Yeah. You look at Brucey and he's that leader, you know, and even Ian Clark said it in an interview the other day that, you know, we're the 30 somethings, we're the veterans in this ball club, and we're the ones who are going to be those leaders in the locker room. So even if he comes back and he doesn't get a whole heap of minutes, Hilton, you know, he's still going to contribute in that locker room. And I think it's good for Sydney that Clark gets to play a little bit more, right? Because, you know, the guy's a microwave, and Brucey will still contribute and maybe play spot minutes if he comes back come playoff time. But I think these guys love each other and playing with each other. And you've seen Chase and how he runs his team, man, looking at that documentary, right? So I think, have you guys changed your mind a little bit on Chase and give him a little bit more love now to say that he's done a good job with his team now or what, you know?
Andrew, you go for it. What do you think? Chase Buford.
Look, he's getting results, right? He came in, yep. And they looked exciting in the preseason. I remember thinking that. They were just so up and down. And
yep.
Then it seemed like the wheels sort of came off. It seemed like he didn't really have the full buy-in from everybody on the team. So that's what led to me thinking, is he actually capable? And the team were a bit all over the place. I think, you know, and I got on a fair bit. But I think, look, proof's in the pudding. And they seem to be a happy group. They seem to be playing for each other.
Yep.
That's what you ask for from a coach, right? To deliver X's and O's and to get a team bought in to have a shared common goal. And I think he's done both of those clearly. So, yeah, well done to him.
Yeah, you said AC. It's a results-based industry, man. And if you're getting results, you're going to keep your job. We talked about Simon Mitchell, man. People easily forget about what happened yesterday. You know what I'm saying? Good so,
I'm going to bring Hilton. Yeah. I can see. I'm going to bring Hilton in a second because someone's got to bring the Sydney Kings hate. If it's not Andrew Kenyon, it's got to be me. I'm going to bring in Hilton. Here we go. And you can listen to my tirade about this. Hang on. I'll get Hilton here. Hilton, here he is. Hey, Hilton. How you doing? Yeah, good to see you. Yeah, welcome. Good. So Woody asked us, have we changed our minds on Buford? I'm going to give this quick and then I'll throw you to the floor. I'll give you the microphone. Hilton, it'll be 2 seconds. So with Chase, we were critical. Started year 3 and 6, I think it was, with all those injuries. Who was out? Adams was out most principally, a couple of us. I want to dissect the streak, though. So they're on a 10-win streak. They have come against these opponents. New Zealand should win. Southeast Melbourne, good win. Brisbane, Perth, very good win. Adelaide should win. Cairns should win. Cairns should beat. Southeast Melbourne when they were in the dregs. Perth at home when they were under the John Brown cloud, but still a good win. And then this one most recently. So I look at it and I go, there's real strength there. But, you know, someone's got to be a hater. And it is what we mean. But as far as Chase Buford goes, what was I going to say? You know, it did put a sour taste in my mouth when obviously Kansas won the national championship just recently. And everyone's like, oh, Chase Buford used to play for Cairns. And I'm thinking, you know, Chase Buford was a invited walk-on onto the Jaguars.
Kansas, you mean, yeah?
At Kansas. What did I say?
Kansas, yeah.
At Kansas, Jayhawks. An invited walk-on. I think his father was the assistant coach. And an invited walk-on is someone who's basically like, yeah, well, you pay your tuition and we'll let you come onto the team and play. I like it. Chase Buford's done well. I'm just being hateful here. But no, 10 straight, the proof's in the pudding. I mean, they just run teams off the floor and they seem to get fast. I thought they were going to do this from the get-go, run real fast up the floor, and they had a real struggle a bit. Now they're just so fast. Teams can't stop them. I mean, this team, they just blew them away in the first quarter, put up, you know, 40 points, whatever it was in the first quarter. They were unstoppable. Tasmania looked cumbersome, couldn't score. And when they put up a shot, it just got rebounded by Cooks and was going the other way. Hilton, let's bring you in. Have you muted yourself or have I muted you?
I muted myself. There you go.
Oh, that's kind. Hilton, yeah, Sydney Kings, talk to me. What do you like? What do you don't like, if anything?
I think the scariest thing at the moment is our run. I know we're going to have a loss somewhere and I don't want that to be finals. Because in 2020, that big loss against Melbourne in the semi-finals down in Melbourne, that was rattling. Like, that was out of nowhere. So we rebounded back, but then, yeah, I'd rather have a loss sooner rather than later just to be comfortable.
I have the Kings scheduled for a loss in 2 days' time, 2 weeks' time or 2 games' time. I think you play Cairns. I think you play someone else easy beat, maybe Adelaide, but then it's Illawarra in Illawarra. And I think that's the one you kind of want to drop because if you just got a massive win streak going into the finals, like you said, that's just not – it's a bad omen. Don't you agree?
Yeah, well, I tweeted – who did I tweet the other day? I think it may have been Hammer and Shane Hill. And I said, should we have a loss? And he goes, a loss wouldn't be bad, but I don't think we need to have one.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't think you need a loss. I think you've been too pessimistic. When you're rolling the way they're rolling, you just keep going with it. You don't need a loss to bring you to reset yourself. They're playing too well for that.
Yeah, and I'm totally with Andrew here, man. Like, I know what HB is saying, man. Like, you'd rather lose one of these last two games against Illawarra than take a big loss in the playoffs and lose some confidence. But if you're rolling and you're winning games, I don't see why we should lose another game for the rest of the season, playoffs included, man. You know what I'm saying? We win these last five, we sweep the semifinals, and we sweep the finals. That would be ideal, man, you know? So, while we're rolling, we just got to keep going, man, and take it one game at a time. But this is as optimistic as I've been about a Kings team in a very long time. Like,
that looks fantastic. If I can throw a question at HB and Woody, we'll go with you, Hilton, first. Look at it from the other side. So let's say you're scouting the Kings and you're whatever team. Let's say you're Illawarra. How do you beat the Kings? What is there a deficiency? If so, what is it? How are teams going to beat the Sydney Kings, if possible?
Five team, Jalen Adams. If you stop him, you stop the Kings pretty much. That bloke is a freak. What he can do, if he doesn't get picked back up by an NBA side, after this season, there is something wrong with those 32 NBA sides.
Yeah, I agree. Woody, same question.
Yeah, I'm with HB, man. Like, the guy is such a great floor general. He makes terrific decisions, you know, out of the pick and roll. And, you know, if he ain't doing it himself, he's making, you know, his teammates better around him. So you got to find a way. I don't know how anybody's going to do that, but, you know, maybe he gets injured, right, HB? Right? That'll help the other teams, right? But hopefully not, man. No, I don't want to put a bad omen. But, yeah, he's basically put this team on his back, and everyone else has said, like, you know, we're gonna come with you. And I think the emergence of a guy like McCall Maker, he's seen like this leader, and he's like, yeah, I'm gonna get on his back, right? So, I'm with HB. Yeah.
The thing that amazes
Andrew, same question.
The thing that gets me with Jalen Adams is his shot is just elite. Like, he is such a good 3-point shooter now. They've got him on one wing. They have Ian Clark. They got DJ. Like, everybody is just banging in triples, but he is just—he's just a problem, because if you guard that three, he's going to go by you. He's the biggest problem in this league since Bryce Cotton, and he does it in a different way. He's not quite as dynamic in terms of his athleticism as Bryce, and his shot doesn't look as pretty, but it's almost more effective.
To me, I look at this team and I say the blueprint to beat them, if there is one, is slowing them down. So that's why I don't know if everyone would agree with me, but I think their biggest contender is not Perth, it's Melbourne. Melbourne junk up a game and are allowed to by the referees, as we spoke about before. Because once the Kings are allowed to get a rebound and go, Tasmania took some shots that were quick for them, and it just went the other way. And for me, I agree with everything everyone said about Adams. I think he's terrific. But for me, it's Xavier Cooks. I think he's the best player on this team, and they took a big risk in getting him. I think they brought him in, the COVID year in the grand final. They went over the cap to get him. It was obvious. I think Paul Smith has admitted that we saw an option. So he took a real financial risk to bring him in at that time. That was the time to strike on Cooks. They brought him in, they signed him, they rehabbed him because he didn't have a great year that year. And now he just looks, I mean, if he's not as NBA ready as anyone, I don't know who is. Rangy, long, rebound, dunk. Man, he looks, he's like Pinder with just a fraction more polish for me.
He reminds me of the Sean Marion, ex-Phoenix, Swiss Army knife guy, can do a little bit of everything on the floor. And I think he's NBA ready. He's going to get a look at Summer League. And, you know, we might as well, value him while we still got him for the next, you know, however many games, you know, the last few games of the season and the playoffs. So cause he ain't going to be in this league next year, that's for sure.
I think we'll end, unless anyone's got anything else to say on the Sydney Kings, we'll leave it there. But I'll say this, I just while Woody's around, Keanu Pinder, what do you have? 22 and 10 in one game, 21 and 10 in the next. I always thought he just had a value as an athletic player. And he has just skyrocketed. He's the most athletic guy in the NBL by a big way. I mean, his dunk on Dane Pinot, where he was just coming down the middle of the floor, Machado dropped it off, and Pinot was just totally dwarfed by him. He was just up in the air, just slammed it down. And he has this weird dunk, Pinder. Like, he gets up high, but he also kind of like just jets at the hoop. Like, he just goes on he's like a pitch, a baseball pitch. He's unreal. Woody, tell us, like, you know, Pinder, were we wrong and people wrong? Go on.
Yeah, I mean, the first half of last season, like, you know, everyone was very critical of him, and came from playing in Poland, and everyone in the media was taking pot shots at him. Look, he's paid too much, and he's not delivering and whatnot. And I was speaking to him, and he was down, you know, he was affecting his mental health. But it really started in the back half of last season, right, when he started to get it together under Connor Henry in Adelaide, and he got that opportunity with Cairns. And you know, as you said, he's got that athleticism and you know, leaping ability, and he's a freak. But this year, he's actually been able to mix that athleticism with good IQ and making good decisions. And, you know, Adam Ford's been a big part of that. And even Nathan Jawai, man, you know, has been a really good mentor for him in that locker room, has helped him. And, you know, he's barely shot a three in the last 3-4 games. I don't mind him shooting a three if he's wide open. He's got a nice stroke, but he's making much better decisions. So he's mixing that athleticism with great IQ. And you know, the results are showing. And I couldn't be happier for him. Just a lovely human being and a great guy. And I think hopefully Cairns can do everything they can to hold on to him next season, right? So, yeah.
Also, he settled on a do. Last year, he went through about four different haircuts. Remember, it was bleach blonde dreads, it was corns, it was blown out. Now he's sort of gone, all right, I'm going with this flick back type thing that seems to be working for him.
Well, yeah, that, he was Afro Pindo for a while, man. You know, and now he's got the as you guys said, but now he's got the cornrows back. So I mean, yeah, man, you got to look good, man. And you know, while you're getting results, if you want to flaunt your hair and things and do all that jazz, then that's all right. You know, if you're not playing well and you're doing all that stuff, then people start talking, right? But
this is true.
I wish I could do my hair like that. My goodness, you should look at my profile photo. That's what I'm dealing with.
Hilton, you've got the last word. What do you want to say as the last thing on the Sydney Kings?
Not much, really. As my question before, just where Brucey fits back in. But
if I'm being honest, I'm not sure he does. I see this team's got a lovely rotation at the minute. Adams getting, I mean, you really think about it, Adams is going to play from here on 34 plus minutes. That leaves 6 minutes at the guard spot. I think he comes back as a good training player and a few spot minutes, but I like the way that they kind of play through Adams when he's starting, and then when it's Clark, he actually comes off and he's handling the ball a heck of a lot. So I think Sean Bruce might struggle a little bit to come back into it, but he's a handy player to have. I'm not denying that, but yeah, I think it's going to be interesting.
And must I say, a lovely bloke as well.
This is what I hear. All right, guys, Woody, Hilton, thank you. This is the Sydney Kings portion, and I appreciate you coming and doing this. This has worked out pretty well, don't you think?
Much love, boys. Much love.
All right, thank you.
All right. Hey, reminder, thanks, and Hilton, aren't you starting a podcast or wanting to?
I'm wanting to. I'm just trying to work out the logistics of it all.
Well, good luck with that, and hopefully how good is this green room thing where people just jump on their phone and you can chat to them and whatever else. So good luck with it. And even when you get it off the ground, we'll happily plug it and go for it. Good luck with it.
Thanks, guys. All right.
Awesome, guys. Thank you.
Thank you for that. All right. I just saw that our man, the owl, Adam Westerhout, has joined. Let's get him. We're going to talk Wildcats. Well, we're going to quickly go through New Zealand, Cairns, and then Perth and Melbourne. And then we're going to bring in Jackson first. I'm sorry, Adam. We're going to bring in Jackson first because he's been here longer. Let's invite Jackson in here. I hope Jackson's ready. Here he comes. All right, so let's quickly go through this front. Jackson is now the speaker. How are you doing, Jackson?
I'm doing very well. I've been on 3 podcasts in 24 hours, so I think I'm doing
well. Which 3? Is this the third or the fourth?
This is the third. So I did Sport Blokes last night. I did NBL News this afternoon, and now I'm doing this. So having a
blast. Wow. Holy shit. Wow. Well, there you go.
Thanks for fitting us into your busy schedule. That's kind of you.
No problem.
All right, let's talk about this one. Let's get New Zealand Breakers Cairns out of the way. I didn't watch it, if I can be totally honest with you. Who did watch it? And if so, who wants to say something?
I didn't watch it either.
I definitely
watched it, man. Cheering on Keanu, man. So, yeah, no, it was good to see. Good to see that they continued their form from the South East Melbourne game on to the game against New Zealand. So yeah, 4 of the last 5, as I said, so they're on a bit of a roll here. So yeah,
was it close? Who played what? Because I saw that Siva had a bit of a down game anyway, box score wise. Yanni Wetzel always gets his points. He had him. Findlayney went scoreless, I think, was the big thing that I was shocked at to see. So how'd it go, Woody? What happened?
I mean, New Zealand got a problem, you know, really defending at the moment, right? And that's the big thing on Shamir, right? I think they got back into it in the second half very close and tied the ball game up. But then Cairns just ran away with it and, you know, Quart Noi starting to hit shots and play some good basketball. You know, Majuk Deng's playing well, Keanu Pinda, Scott Machado. And the New Zealand team just looked like they're waiting for the season to end, man. They want to put it behind them, right, this season.
Right now, I mean, we pump their tires a little bit, but I just think they are just like, get Besson. And Hugo Besson and Usman Dieng, get their minutes. They're our gravy ticket in the offseason. They're not doing it cynically, but that's their objective, and they're doing it. And if they win, great. If they don't, oh, well, yeah, it's been a horrible year.
I feel sorry for all the imports who thought, yeah, I'm going to go to New Zealand, check out the beautiful country, have a look at all the sites, you know, and all they've done is gone around rural Australia. So sorry about that, boys.
Yeah, Chasson Randall has been absolutely terrible. actually, to be fair, right? So I don't know why they got rid of J-Mart in the first place.
I didn't
place,
hate
right?
Jeremiah Martin. He didn't. He was sort of struggling on D a little bit. But, yeah, Rand, and when you say terrible, was he chasing his shot and jacking it up or just not there?
He just goes invisible for large periods, man, in a lot of the last few games I've seen. So, yeah, he's just not having an impact.
Yeah, fair enough. Let's jump on to Jackson and Perth and Melbourne. Before we talk about this game, no doubt you spoke about it on the Sport Blokes, Jackson and others, but take us through that presser. It was the big news of the week. Take us through it. What happened, your reaction when it did happen?
Well, I was incomplete. So we're talking about the one after the Tassie game.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I was just in complete shock at the moment. And, at what happened. And because what happened the day prior, I just thought, oh, they're going to, it's going to be announced tomorrow, and it wasn't. So I just asked, has this whole situation clouded the team? And then he ranted at me for a minute. I mean, he was under pressure. Yeah. Fair enough. He lost the game by 2 points, but, swearing, it's here and there. And then, I'm very glad that I've had a lot of support from a lot of people. And what was even more interesting was after the Sydney game and that press conference, because you've said it, and, I've never been part of a situation like that where you're told you can't ask about something. So, the whole situation has been a mess with Brown, not just that press conference, but, like, legitimately everything. And then was it yesterday or the day before? NBL came out with a statement saying, oh, he finally got clearance, but we're not going to allow it because of the integrity of the league. And it's just very, very messy at the moment.
Yeah, this whole integrity of the league, this is really interesting. And I'm looking at this decision and just thinking, where's my take on this? And I don't want to do a hot take guy, and I don't want to be Wildcats fanboy. I'm trying to think, I get where they are coming from, right? I totally understand the league's position about maintaining a fairness in that those are the rules that were set, everybody played to them, so be it. But there's a part of me that just says, he was in the country in time, they didn't play Frazier, and there's a war, and, Russian sports teams are, they're not going to go out of their way to upset the Russian government and make anybody in anywhere else in the world make it easy for them. It just doesn't make sense. So I just think this whole thing about extenuating circumstances, if this isn't an extenuating circumstance, what is?
The only reason I should take the opposite view, Andrew, and I think that...
And we kind please of, do, because working on this. This is like...
Yeah, I think the idea of... The reason why is but the problem is if you start fiddling with that 7 week or 7 game before the playoff, you start fiddling with that, then this league just becomes a whole different color where you just bring in an import in the last 5 games or the last 2 games and you change the season. I think 7's a good, but I just don't think that putting the war aside, and I don't know how big of a deal the war is in Russia, but I will say this, the rules are pretty obvious. Players want to get out of Russia. You had to get him cleared for whatever reason. This is a clearance issue and a thing issue. This is not, if they'd done it, all they had to do was start this process much earlier when they knew they weren't keeping Frazier. I don't see this as an actual, I don't know how much the fingerprints of the war are on this as it is just the Wildcats. They only started wanting to make a move 11 days before the deadline. Not good enough, in my opinion. Not, you've got to be start doing this 2-3 months before you pull the pin on it. So
yeah,
I actually kind of agree. Does anyone? Do you disagree with the ruling?
I think you're right. In terms of they wanted to make a move, but they wanted to make a move for a particularly good player. And you're right, they should have moved sooner, and they should have just gone for somebody who was okay. They tried to roll the dice and get somebody who was really good, and it's backfired on them.
And maybe didn't want to pay, two of them for longer or whatever. I'm going to bring in, just while we were on that question of the presses going one back, Adam Westerham contacted me. He goes, he was in the room when Morrison gave the answer. So I'm going to call on Adam to have a chat. What was that like, Adam?
G'day, everyone. My read on it was It's impossible for Jackson to have been able to read the room. When you're in a press conference like that and you're in person, you can get the vibe of the tension and the atmosphere in the room. I think Jackson, without really knowing you, mate, had you been in that room, you still would have posed that question, but I think it would have been led in a different way. I don't have an issue with the question, but I can see how you could just read Morrison's body language and his demeanor that when that question came, his mind wasn't in that place for that question at that time. And fair enough, he's a professional coach and he should be ready for anything. He was looking down the barrel at you. and I was standing at the back of the room and I was just kind of like duck my head down and play on my phone and react to the tweet to say this press conference is insane. But it was a very tense situation and he was not playing games and everyone in the room, the media manager and everything, was just all a bit taken aback by that outburst. It was like Joe said, it was a fun podcast to be a not podcast fun press conference to be a part of.
Jackson, yeah. I'll get your comment on that, Jackson.
Well, I obviously knew that something was up when he rocked up in a black t-shirt rather than the club's polo. But it's very, very difficult to feel the, you know, when I'm in Melbourne, right? Or when I'm upstairs, in the words of Dwayne Russell, I'm, you know, it's very, very difficult to feel that presence because I'm looking this through a screen and through a camera and I don't get to see the full thing and I whatever, and the audio doesn't start until, you know, they're there. So it's very, very odd, but I just thought, you know, this question has to be asked if it isn't me, and I've had this response from many people. If it isn't me, somebody's gonna ask it after me. So I have to ask it, and I got a response, which is here and there, but I just want to leave this in the past now, and I never want to bring it up again.
If I can ask you one final question on Jackson, one final question.
Yes.
So who reached out to you from a formal standpoint? Has the NBA, my thought is, Scott Morrison should have called you. He should have called you back. He should have gone, oh yeah, who was it, by the way? Yeah, I'll give him a call. And not even to apologize, just say, listen, I gave a really strong answer. I don't know if that's what you're looking for, but so has Morrison reached out to you? Has Wildcats reached out to you? Has NBL HQ reached out to you?
So Wade Dobson, the Wildcats media manager, reached out to me, and that's been the only first party kind of engagement. And he was really great to me, and I really appreciate that he reached out. But that's been the only thing. So
okay,
yeah.
And then everyone ripping off your stuff, just going like, "Oh, some reporter." I'm like, no, 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 not some reporter. Jackson McDonald, say it on the broadcast. That kind of ticked me off a little bit. I was just like, no, no, come on, if you're going to do it, everyone knows it was you. Like, it's not on the Zoom call, it's got your name there, and this is a small circle. I knew immediately it was you. I was like, oh shit, kid's getting flamed. So I thought, yeah, they should have named you, I think. But anyway, glad. Let's talk about the game. Who's jumped in? Is that Andrew?
Oh, that was me. I just, before we lose track of it, I just want to say we're talking about the Scott Morrison wearing his black shirt. If you watch the presser today that Scott Morrison did, he's a strange character. I can't get to the bottom of his personality type from these sort of video press conferences. He mentioned that he wore a non-Wildcat shirt one day in 5 months, and he's gotten in trouble for that, which is obviously that black shirt day. He was talking about culture and, you know, that what they have all these posters up, but it doesn't mean anything if they don't buy into it. But I encourage everybody to watch the Scott Morrison presser from today. It's a strange way he went about trying to explain culture and what the Wildcats are all about. And I just went and walked away from it thinking, I don't think he really gets it.
Well, you said this to me. You said culture, ? I actually haven't seen it. I'm sorry. I haven't seen it in time. What was he saying, and what was your, why did it bristle with you?
Yeah, so he was talking about how the Wildcats, you know, as soon as he got there, everybody was talking about the amazing culture of this club and it was so special. And we all have to wear club-issued uniform at all times, and we've got all these posters on the wall and big deal. And he sort of went around to say, like, well, if the players don't play in the way that is representative of that culture, like, it doesn't really matter. And so I sort of get what I can't understand what he was getting at, but it was the way it was said. And maybe he just didn't speak clearly. And I'm not speaking clearly now, trying to paraphrase what he said. But it just seemed very much like them and us. And he's been a bit like this the whole season. You know, he's sort of like, he talks about they, the playing group, and then you've got the physio group, and the physio group tell him who plays, and he just coaches, and he just coaches who turns up on the night. And it just feels like there's this real friction between the different divisions of the club. It's just it seems like he is intentionally divorcing himself from the broader club, right? You know, or
preventing shirking responsibility from
buying into it. I'd encourage you to watch it and draw your own conclusions.
I will. I think we will. Also, this NBL News has asked the question, if Perth get bounced or don't make the finals, which I think they will, or get bounced in the first round, does he get the sack? I don't think they look at him favourably about bringing him back. This has not been a good year. I want to ask Adam. Adam, you're closest to the Wildcats as far as, you know, I think, were you at this last game? What's the vibe on the court, these players? Like, that Sydney loss was brutal. This loss against Melbourne was it equally bad? What do you think?
I'm going to play this. Like, obviously, for those that don't know, I'm paid by the NBL as the match day manager in Perth, and I've got some close ties with the Wildcats. But I am also a fan, so wearing my fan hat, I'll give you my interpretation of the Sydney game where I watched from the crowd, and some things that I've picked up just along the way that I think it's fine to share. When we talk about, and when Andrew said earlier around Scott Morrison being the coach and deflecting certain decisions that should be made by Danny Mills or the front office, I think it's very interesting because from Scott Morrison's position, and I'm speculating here, he's come from that environment in the NBA where that's how they operate. He's the coach, they deal with that stuff, and the front office deals with that. Because the NBL is so close and diehard fans like us, like, know the inner workings or the so-called inner workings of how a club is and what it was like when Gleeson was at the helm, you're used to it being this one united front being put forward. And so I almost think for Morrison, it's not that jarring. Like, he's giving his perception of the world. But for us fans, it seems so odd and so peculiar because why is there this massive disconnect? So I just think that's food for thought. But one of the interesting things I've noticed at games is the Wildcats production is just sometimes as a fan, it's incredibly irritating because someone will make a three. You want to look up at the scoreboard and all you see is an ad for Retrovision or something. So they're very good at their product placement. But the person that's been rubbing the wrong way the most is actually Morrison, because in his just general tics of how he coaches the game, he tends to look up at the scoreboard quite a bit to reference plays, replays and things like that. And there's been a bit of back and forth with him and the non-basketball, the game operation side of things, trying to work out a happy medium as to what's on the screen that can benefit the actual basketball as opposed to what are their commitments to sponsors and things like that. So it's definitely a new relationship and they're working out their boundaries and what can be changed to suit Morrison's way and what can't be because of the commercial side of what the Wildcats do. So that's been my observations of it.
That's fascinating. It doesn't surprise me because I think the Wildcats and probably this new ownership, I mean, it's an entertainment organization now, and that's the way they've looked at it for a long time. You know, like, the basketball is one of the products on the night. And it's like they talk about, we've got music and we've got this and we've got that and we've got product placement. And it's like, it's, you know, for some, Morrison's trying to win a basketball game. And so that's all he cares about. And that's all, like, probably we all care about. But the Wildcats have always taken this view of, like, well, we're here to entertain. Interesting.
Hang on a second now, Andrew. I mean, if Morrison comes from an NBA background, if he's not familiar with commercial time after that, then when is he going to get used to commercial time? I want to ask this. Let's go to the game. I want to bring in Jackson, first of all. Then we'll go Adam, and then we'll go my man, Andrew Canyon. The actual game against Melbourne, they lost at 75-84. Jackson, how did you see the game going? And the big question is, why did the Wildcats lose?
Well, just first of all, no relation to anything. I hate that it was like 2 days after daylight savings. The game started 9:30 over here, but it felt like 11. But that's just me. But the big thing...
Oh, can everyone still hear? I've lost hearing.
Yeah.
It just came back. It just came back.
Okay, Jackson, try again. No, I think we've lost Jackson. Jackson, we'll come back to you in a bit. Let's go you, Andrew. Perth, why'd they lose? And Melbourne, why'd they win equally?
Shea Illy won them that game. It was a tremendous fourth quarter, whole game, but really the fourth quarter. They put the clamps on and he just worked harder than anybody else. Wildcat shooting continues to be a problem. Jesse Wagstaff's early season three-point form has deserted him. And Vic Law picked up the injury plus the fouls, so he was hampered. But Melbourne, they shot the ball well. It was a bit like Sydney last week, you know. This time it was Chris Golding. But the amount of, Todd Blanchfield seemed like he was trying to get away from Chris Golding instead of playing defense on him by putting a hand up in his face. It was not the greatest defensive effort. So again,
Golding had one shot that was nothing short of incredible. Really tight on the sort of free throw foul line extended fadeaway three, unbelievable. But there was
like the Tassie game.
Oh,
he took that big chunk of time out and that kind of forced a switch in the game. So that's just my thoughts on it.
Thanks, Jackson. We had a bit of a cross wires there, but I'll get you in a second. Golding, like he a couple of times just was unmarked and hit these threes in Blanchfield's kind of hand. I was just like, come on, man. I actually thought it was really meek from the Wildcats. There were one time JLA just came down late in the piece when it was, 4 minutes left in the fourth and they're down six and they're right on the precipice of making something. And then Joel Achul gets this dunk in the key way. And then I want to say Jack White gets a put. They just had these defensive lapses. They just gave up two major layups, and that was kind of the game for me. Illy won it. I'm going to go to you, Adam. Did you watch this? Were you there in person by any chance, or did you watch it on TV?
I was. Can you hear me? I was working that.
Yep, loud clip.
Yep. So I was working that game. So I had the pleasure of being very close to courtside for most of it. My fan impression of it or what happened with that. It was a close game, but it came down to that the start of the fourth quarter. And the Wildcats' insistence on trying to force the ball into Hodgson in the post, I just think that was just not the right game plan. All the defense and stuff aside and the misassignments, it was reported that it was a playoff-like game and it came down to a few possessions. And for me, those few possessions were the start of the fourth quarter, three possessions in a row, we tried to force it into Hodgson in the post. And it just wasn't happening. I don't think you're going to get something quality out of Hodgson at that point in the game. And I don't think that is the best option personally. But that was my take on it. And from the Melbourne side of things, one thing I noticed is Melbourne and Dean Vickerman are intense on the referees.
Yes.
I noticed it more this game gone by than I have any time in the last couple of seasons. It's like they've taken a page out of Trevor Gleeson's playbook and how the Wildcats play that intense defense. Like you can't call fouls the entire game, but they're good at it. Dean Vickerman is very good at it. And he is on the ref's butts like the entire game, more so than any other coach I've seen that close.
And that's the problem. And thank you, Adam. That's the problem for me. I mean, I thought Illy was allowed to do stuff where I was like, he's fouling. There was one, and Jackson, I think, if you're still there, your wires got crossed just before. But remember when Travis grabbed that rebound? Illy just came over his back, smacked him in the head.
Yeah.
He just smacked him in the back of the head. I was like, you can't. He has possession of the ball. I thought it was clear as day. And then there was a time Cotton was driving at the hoop and got hit on the back of the head by Illy as well. Those calls come and go. But when they kept mounting up, I was like, shit. And when you say it, Adam, Melbourne are just allowed to And that's the thing with NBL refs. Like, you've got to be able to stand up to the Gleasons and the Vickerman and not just let them corral you into making every call. I sound like I'm a Melbourne hater. I really commend them for what they do. But it just seemed like Morrison had his mask on. He was only too happy to just kind of, oh, yeah, well, it'll play how it plays. I'm like, no, that's not. It's not certainly how Vickerman played it. What do you think of the reffing, Andrew?
Yeah, I think it's a really good point. You could hear Vic. I was watching on TV. You could hear Vickerman on the effects mic. You know, he was coming across pretty loud and clear. And he barks at him. And there was so much criticism of Gleeson, and rightly so, over the past years for his carry-on. He was frustrating as well. I'm not forgiving him that. But in the same way that he was annoying, now Vickerman is as well. And I think you've got, the ref crew, I know it was, I'm trying to remember who the crew was.
Michael Aylin was one.
And you've got the guy with the accent, who speaks with the accent.
Latina guy, real broad shoulders, good posture. Yeah, I know the guy.
Nico Fernandez.
He is the one. Nico Fernandez. Thank you.
Nico Fernandez.
He seems to be the one that's gets a bit daunted by it all, you know? And I think he sometimes tries to put on a tough face, but I think it gets in his head. Which is a worry because he's probably one of the better up and coming refs overall.
Would anyone disagree that it's not working at United? Like, it is working for them. They play the best defense in the country and it's working really, really well for them.
Sure is. I think, you know, at this point, you're looking at the finals and you're going, it's going to be probably a Melbourne-Sydney grand final on, you know, I don't know, but the matchups will work out, but that's the two form teams. And that would be a really fun series to watch because the contrasting styles would be amazing.
I'm going to bring in Adam, then Jackson on this one. Did the Wildcats just improve and get better with Mitch Norton? I mean, we're talking about when the Kings were real bad, we spoke about it before, they were 3-6 to start the season. They didn't have their point guard in Jalen Adams. Well, Perth don't have Mitch Norton, who plays the best defense and is the one guy, this is what I thought they really lacked as well as the Hodgson thing, Adam. I thought they just missed a guy. I thought Travis did a really good job, you know, handling a lot of the ball, but wasn't a guy who was over the ball. You know, if you give him a lane, he's going to take it. Whereas Mitch Norton is a guy I think puts a lot of pressure on the rim and straight line driver. I thought they really missed him. So my question then is, Adam, and then I'll go to Jackson. When Mitch Norton returns, does this team just come back to being a contender?
It's 2 points with Mitch. He's definitely missed, and his basketball IQ and defensive hustle is surely missed. But the second point, and I don't know if Mitch coming back is the answer to this, but the Wildcats chemistry just to me looks off. They don't look like the trust isn't visible on the court. It doesn't look enjoyable at the moment. Obviously they're losing three in a row. But the example I'll give is in seasons past, when the team does something well on offense that involves the whole team and Bryce isn't the one scoring, but he's in the mix creating plays and they're moving the ball, you'd visibly see Bryce impress, fist pump, clench the fist, give his player the look and the nod. You haven't seen that this season at all. And I wonder if that's just a chemistry balance thing going on that is just not clicking with the pieces that they've got. And so going back to Norton, I don't know if Norton's the answer in that regard. Yes, he'll give them some defensive intensity and help look after the ball, but the chemistry side, I don't know if they can turn that corner.
Jackson, same question. Wildcats, are they a contender with Norton?
They'll be a contender with Norton, yes, but they need to fix their rotations because a big thing for me, and I have the stats up here for this game, so I remember early Kev White came on for a bit. He hit a three and then he was immediately benched. Kev White and Kyle Zunick only played 22 minutes combined. And they're two point guards without Norton. And Bryce played 37 and Perth went down by 10. And, you know, if Norton comes back in, you know, fair enough. Hopefully those rotations will be fixed. But Majuk only played 9 minutes and he started while Hodgson played 20 and Wagstaff played 20. Like a guy like Hayes Brown, I think would be really, really good in this situation, because we saw in the, I know the blitz isn't a great level, but we saw in the blitz, Guy can rebound, and we saw it earlier in the season, Guy can rebound for days, and he just hasn't been given the opportunity, whether that's due to injuries or road trip or whatever. But yeah, I just think hopefully Norton will plug that point guard spot and let Bryce go off ball and let other guys not handle the ball as much. Like Travers would have been playing point guard for most of it, or at least handling the ball for most of it. And he's not the type of guy you'd want to do that. And Morrison has this thing of which it's positionless basketball, and you know, everybody from the 1 through 5 will handle the ball at some stage. And it's a mess, but hopefully they fix it in time for finals, if they make it, that is.
That was my thought for this game. I just thought too many before, like the Wildcats offense under Gleason, and I do hate to compare Morrison to Gleason, but you can't help it. Their offense was just to a point. It was like, we're going to get Bryce the ball here, here, and here. He's going to come off screens here, here, and here. And if we don't, if he doesn't hit the shot, John Mooney, you're going to crash the glass from this position opposite to where Cotton's shooting it. It was so to a point, and everyone knew their role. Whereas this now, like you just had too many Wildcat role players having to make really sophisticated plays. And I saw you're going to just put the ball in Travis's hand, and there's a lot of dribbling out the 3-point line trying to get something going. And as a result, I think the steal count was way up in Melbourne's favour, and then just the overall turnover count, you know, Wildcats were way higher than Melbourne, and it just reeked of that. But, I mean, here's the thing. Melbourne United are the top seed, and the Wildcats lost to them by, what, 10? Jackson, have you got the score there?
They lost to them by 9.
Lost them by 9. Is Mitch Norton a 9-point difference maker? I think maybe. But I agree with you, Adam. They don't look fun. I think maybe this offense of, you know, get it to guys and kind of clear out a bit. Maybe it's created this division between the skillfuls, the haves and the have-nots. You know, the Cotton and the Law are on one island, and then there's the guys just sort of scrapping around before. But, Andrew, I'll get you. Your thought on the Wildcats, this game and them in general.
Yeah, this game, yeah, it was said that they were improved, their intensity was improved, and it was. You know, there were definitely signs in the right direction. Is it enough? No, it's not enough. I still think the John Brown thing has been a huge distraction for everybody involved. On the bright side, look, they got Michael Frazier back, so buckle up.
Do they, though? I'm going to throw it out. does Frazier return?
I hope he returns. For anyone that knows me, I'm a big wrestling fan. So the storyline wise, entertainment wise, the narrative. If Frazier can come back and all of a sudden become this massive babyface fan favorite, because all right, the casual Cats fans are like, who's this guy? He hasn't done anything. All of a sudden he comes out and he's just bawling. He gets all his superpowers back because he's got his confidence back. Balls out, averages 12 points a game for the rest of the season. Another grand final.
He's capable of it. I think it's the ultimate storyline.
But yeah, but I'm all for redemption arcs and stories like that.
I would love to see him come out with an FU attitude and just blaze away.
Do you think it actually happens, though? I mean,
sorry, guys. I think I cut out.
No, we got you. Don't worry. Do you think they actually... I mean, they've sort of sat him for a while with a quote-unquote sore hamstring. Does he contractually, can they just go, yeah, come on back? I mean, I would have thought he'd be sitting there going, I could try and sign somewhere else, but if they're going to pay me, yeah, I'll come back. Or is his ego bruised, or is there something contractually that's going to stop him from coming back? Does anyone have an answer to that?
I don't, but I feel like if he's going to come back, I don't think he'll be playing big minutes, because I think... What's happened is they've said, and Morrison actually said this in the press conference, or at least I've seen a clip of it, where it's like, and I think the quote was, it's like you're in a relationship and then you leave your ex, and then you leave your lover to go with somebody else, but then you come crying back. And it's very difficult for Frazier to come back in and be a big force for him. You know, particularly with the hamstring or whatever it is, you know, waiting for Fever to get clearance or whatever. And they don't have a lot of space at that 2-3 spot because they'll be occupied by Blanchfield, Travers, and maybe Laura a bit, and Cotton, obviously. But it's just a wait and see, I think.
I think it'd be a bit of a punch. I think it'd be fun, but I'd say this about that girlfriend quote, partner comment. I didn't see that, but I look at the Will Smith thing and I'm like, you know, Will Smith was standing up for his girl who's gone off with others. So maybe this is a Will Smith situation all over again. Very interesting for the Wildcats. I'm still like, gee, they've got Bryce Cotton and Vic Law. And I can't escape that thinking. They have two of the three best players in the NBA. It's Vic Law. It's Cotton number one. It's Jalen Adams number two. And it's Vic Law in that conversation for three. So I still find it hard to get rid of them. And Morrison's just got to work out where those other guys fit in. And Mitch Norton, I think, you know, he got paid a lot in the offseason. And I think rightfully so after this game. He's an impactful player for them and any team that he went to. So I'm not as down on the Wildcats as some are around. Andrew.
Yeah, just wondering, we've got both Daniel and NBL News. Is NBL News another person or is we got that want to have a chat?
I'll bring him in.
Yeah, get Evan.
Here we go. I've sent him an invitation. Evan, jump on in. We're about to wrap it up here. That was the games that were. Here we go. Yep. NBL News would like to speak.
Hello.
Hello, Evan. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Thanks for chiming in, man. Actually, I'll get your opinion. You're a podcaster, Evan. What do you think of this Spotify green room thing? Kind of neat, huh?
I like it. Good idea. I might use it myself. Steal it off you guys.
Hey, good artist copy, great artist steal, right, man. You know. In NBL overtime is on fucking Spotify green room. This we've talked about the games, Evan. Let's talk about, is there anything outside of the games that we want to talk about? Oh, let's talk about next round. Has anyone got the schedule in front of them? I'll bring it up.
I'll get it up.
Yeah, do indeed, Jackson. I'm going to do it too. Did anything happen off court that's worth mentioning? I can't really recall.
Well, we talked today about the whole John Brown situation about, I think we've already talked about it a little bit, but whether the NBL should have allowed it or not to have him play his last five games.
Actually,
talking about Russia, Mikhailovsky dominated for us in the Russian league.
There's probably only Russians playing in the Russian league at this point.
All right, let's actually look at round 19. The games that are worth a damn. Andrew, have you got a write up on the games that are worth watching?
I'm just bringing it up now.
Game is worth watching. That's Thursday at 7:30 on the East Coast, which would be what, 5:30 on the West Coast. The throwdown. Does it actually have
that?
You don't care. It doesn't have any value, does it? Because South East Melbourne are going to lose, and they're kind of done. So looking at this round,
this entire round is
pretty dire round, guys. Pretty one-sided games throughout the round.
So. Oh, I think Woody said it. Boy, oh boy, that's the only game I'd take in the throwdown because South East Melbourne are theoretically a chance if they were to win it, but they're not going to. Does anyone think South East Melbourne can beat Melbourne? I don't think they're a prayer.
There's a slight chance, but they need a rain dance for it to happen. But like, they need Brokoff back, but that's not going to happen.
He's confirmed out. He won't play.
Yeah. Also, off-court stuff. Magne's out for the season, but I think that's a bit irrelevant now.
Weird year from him. Like, I showed flashes and then was as soon as he arrived, was gone. So that's a second year down for him with injury. So not a good look.
Yeah. The only other game I can see that is of some, you know, thought is the other Thursday night game, just purely because can Perth finally win and can they break their losing streak? But that's it from me.
Perth should win. It's only New Zealand.
Yeah.
Should is a very big word when it comes to New Zealand.
What do you think? Daniel's chimed in and said, New Zealand, Sydney. Is that of interest to anyone? I don't see New Zealand being a prayer against Sydney, but Daniel thinks opposite. Does anyone think that Sydney are any chance not to cream?
The only good thing about that is we get to watch a game on a Tuesday night this week, so that'll be fun. But
That is kind of neat. I'll take it in the second half.
This Wildcat, the last Wildcats Melbourne on a Monday night, geez, that made my day. Mondays are so depressing and boring. And to have that to look forward to and then The NBL should do something with that. Monday night basketball, put a good blockbuster on, you know, change it up. Probably not good for crowds, but it's good for TV.
Well, I think that's pretty much everything, unless we've got anything else to go over. I think this Spotify Green Rooms, this is kind of a success. And for other podcasts, it's a good way to get guests on as well, because you just download the app and you do it through your phone. Pretty good.
I think the way you moderate it, Joe, is very good.
I appreciate it. I appreciate that. Yeah. I was actually napping. Woody was like, when's this thing happening? I was like, wow, I woke up and had a long day. I appreciate it, lads. Well, we'll do it again for sure. So this will go up as an actual NBL Pocket Pod. Does anyone have any problem with anything they've said? They're like, oh, shit, I should cut that out or not. I can just put it up in its entirety.
All good, man.
Yeah, go for it.
Perfect. All right, lads. Well, to Andrew, obviously, Woody, Jackson, Adam, Evan, Daniel, and Hilton, who's come and gone. Really appreciate it. Andrew, I always give you the final word. You go for it.
Oh, I've got a big final word. It's actually a bit, I'm going to cheat because it's a bit of a cross promotion, right? This season, I am doing commentary, live stream commentary for the Perth Redbacks in the NBL 1 West. So make sure you tune in to those games. Perth Redbacks home games. You'll have Andrew Canyon on the call. So there you go.
On what platform? YouTube, Spotify?
So it's through NBL One. So it's the official NBL One channel. So they live stream it.
KO?
And they have one game. I think some are on KO. I don't know if they're all on KO. Might be game of the week on KO.
And importantly.
Color or
play-by-play,
Andrew? Sorry,
Joe. No, it's all right. If it's color, it would be a wider shade of pale. Sorry, Andrew.
I am the color guy.
And I see Woody here. Robbie, half of Throwback Hoops, is also doing NBL One. What would be East?
Yeah, he's doing the Hills Hornets game here in Sydney. And as Andrew said, you can just jump on the NBL One website and stream all the games live there. And you're right, Andrew. I think there's one game of the week that's on KO as well. So.